Now on to our bloggers roundtable. Mixed race, pretty face, a new study says it's true. Plus, should the government be able to take religion into account when looking for terrorists? The Justice Department thinks yes. With us, Wayne Hicks, known in the blogosphere as The Villager. He writes the blog Electronic Village. Freelance writer and nonprofit consultant Amy Larimore of the blog Alid's Work in Progress. She blogs with her husband at Political Season. And former Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Kevin Ross. He blogs at Three Brothers and a Sister and hosts The Kevin Ross Show on Blog Talk Radio. Hi, folks.
Hey.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. This is just lighting people on fire. So there is a story from the New York Times economics blog, Freakonomics, that comes from the guys who did the best-selling book. The article is called The Plight of Mixed-Race Children. Now, isn't that dramatic? Now, the study breaks down the behavior, looks, and academic prowess of people of mixed race, specifically those who have one black parent and one white parent. Here's the most controversial result. Biracial kids exhibit terrible behavior, but they're all really, really good looking. Now, that's a slight exaggeration, but they're above average in terms of their looks, according to this study. You can find more of the study's findings at our blog, nprnewsandviews.org. So, Kevin, you know, you're not afraid of controversy. What do you make of this?
Well, you know,
this is academics. This is not just, you know, guys on the corner.
Well, you know, I find it fascinating because I am a light-skinned African-American male with green eyes. And when my youngest was born, my youngest had blue eyes and blonde hair. I am African-American. My wife is African-American. Both our parents are African-American. We get asked all the time, are we biracial? Are you know, do you have a parent that's something other than black? So when I see a study like this, I find it to be somewhat confusing and idiotic because just looking at individuals, if you were to look at me, you would surmise that maybe I'm mixed. So does that mean I'm better looking because my eyes are green as opposed to my oldest son whose eyes are brown? Or if I'm someone who is identifying beauty, it's been my experience that black women particularly tend to find darker skinned men more physically alluring. As my wife says, that's a man, you know, whereas, you know, people who look like me tend to be referred to as pretty boys. And it's seen as being a negative as opposed to being like a Denzel Washington, a Michael Jordan, even someone like a Sidney Poitier back in the day or a Billy Dee Williams. So this whole notion of beauty as it relates to skin tone and thereby saying that somehow you have this difference because one parent is black, one parent's white, I just don't buy it.
Well, Amy, doesn't this bring up the whole idea that most black people are mixed anyway? It's just we all have a different bit of mix in us. But underlying that whole, this whole study, is there an assumption that black features that are darker are not attractive at all?
Well, you have to look at who's judging cuter. I mean, I was amazed in reading the article with the recent International Vogue magazine with all African-American models. People were just in awe of the wide success, when the reality is in 2008 it still seems surprising that people encounter all the stereotypes, and seeing all the wonderful images of African-American women was just like, wow, this is rocket science for some. I'm really more interested in how do you get paid to study these issues with all of the things that are going on in our society.
I'm there with you.
This is not the plight as a mother of three children that really is on the top of my radar.
Preach.
Wayne, you know, when you think about the whole idea of behavior, there's been a lot of debate even on how people measure behavior, because I measure behavior one way when some kid is kicking the back of my seat on an airplane, but I measure behavior another way when I look at social science studies and people know that the people observing kids bring their own biases to the table. So what do you make of the whole twist on behavior?
You know, I think the whole study, whether it's the less well-behaved part or the more attractive part, is just a sign of almost the times where we just won't accept the fact that interracial relationships is more the norm when you look back at our history than almost the exception. And as was pointed out earlier, maybe not first generation intermarriage, but you know, there's virtually no person of African descent in America that's not had some degree of, you know, white, Caucasian you know, parent or genealogy in them. And so it's kind of a non-issue. When I look at the beauty part, I will say that there's an awful lot of role models that are, like, whether it's Derek Jeter of the New York Yankees, whether it's obviously Tiger Woods of sports and golf fame, and now with the presidential candidacy of Barack Obama, you know, being interracial or biracial is more acceptable, which I can almost see where that led to folks thinking that folks are more attractive. I think the last thing I said, if I did have biracial children or if I was involved in that type of relationship, I will tell you that when I listened to Barack Obama give that speech in Philadelphia on the Not a Perfect Union, and where he kind of talked about it from both perspectives, I mean, that would be my motivational speech that I would listen to and share with my children almost on a daily basis on iPod or YouTube or wherever, because that truly did break it down for me in a way that personally and professionally I'd never seen it broken down before.
I want to move on to a topic that has to do with the law. Reports say the Justice Department is considering letting the FBI investigate Americans based on racial, religious, and ethnic traits, among others. They say the proposed policy would help them do exactly what Congress demanded after the September 11th attacks, root out terrorists. And this raises the P word, profiling. Kevin, you know the law well.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of this idea of this change in what protected categories are versus acceptable categories for, you know, tracking folks down?
Well, you know, I have to say I am really okay with this whole idea of racial profiling. I think where we get into some muddy waters is the execution of the parameters that we're working within. I mean, anytime you have a situation where you can identify certain demographics and individuals who may be terrorists that we need to at least be aware of, that's not where the problem is. The problem is in the execution and who's making the decisions. And there is, in so many instances, there's been this insensitivity to how it makes those who are being profiled feel. It's not as though we're getting input from individuals from Islam or African Americans or people from the diaspora. What's happening is the people that are making the decisions, oftentimes they are not taking into account certain feelings and historical things that Black folks and other people of color have gone through when they are executing on these issues. But by and large, the concept in and of itself, I agree with.
Now, that is
Wayne. You're laughing at me.
I hear you chuckling, Wayne. This has been, regardless of how things have been implemented, it has been almost sacred that within the law there are certain categories that you can pursue as categories of interest, and certain ones where you have to be more careful. What do you think about Kevin's interpretation?
I don't think that there's any place in the law to legislate and to make it okay for racial, ethnic, or religious profiling. Period. What I will say, and I agree with Kevin, is that the execution of the law in the history of this country is it happens all the time. I mean, if you go to any courtroom, I sense that the legal system is full of racial profiling against Black males, as an example. If you go to any place where the whole prison system, that whole system is set up in such a way that racial profiling is very, very obvious. But to say that it's a good idea to legislate and to say that it's okay to racially profile based on skin color, you know, that's ridiculous in my view.
Well, Wayne, it's interesting that, you know, you and I, we met at the Bloggers Conference in Atlanta. So I have the utmost respect for you, but you hit it right on the head. We do it anyway.
So it's not to legislate it.
No, what I'm saying is, but because we do it wrong or we do it in a way that has this sinister outcome, that's where the issue is. The mere fact that there are certain individuals, whether they're by gender or by age or by race or by origin, if those factors can be looked at objectively to protect our country, we have to at least consider that.
If they can be looked at objectively. But we have a history that says it cannot be looked at objectively.
By who, though? Because if Amy were the
By
person,
anybody in government, well, by the people that are making the laws, there is no history whatsoever that says that they will fairly and objectively consider race, ethnicity, or religion in any kind of a fair and objective way. And so to say that it's okay for them to legislate what they have no history of doing right in such an area, that's a slippery slope that I would not like to see us go down.
And that would be an amen here.
All right. Well, we have time for a quick look at pop culture. It is official. Lawrence Fishburne is joining the cast of CSI Crime Scene Investigation. He's going to replace another actor leaving the series. And his first TV role, you might remember, we're talking about Fishburne here, was Cowboy Curtis on Pee Wee's Playhouse in the 1980s. I totally watched that. And he has earned Emmys, a Tony, an Oscar nomination. I'll stick with you, Amy. Do you think that this is a good move for him? And in general, why do you think so many movie actors, not just black ones, like Holly Hunter, are moving into television?
Mortgages. I really think
keep it real, Amy. Amen to
that. Is that actors and actresses need to get paid. And while I'm thrilled and happy to watch Lawrence Fishburne, the question becomes, what do we have to watch? I mean, when you look at what's happening with the shows on TV, and if you're not dying from the oversaturation of reality TV, then we're looking at painfully weak storylines. You know, I don't watch a lot of TV these days, but if I'm going to watch it, I'd be happy to see Lawrence, you know, on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and that brings a point that I think is real important, is that it is a great thing for Lawrence Fishburne. I remember from Cornbread, Earl and Me.
There you go.
When he was back in the day.
Now you're talking.
So it is great for him. I think the real issue that I look at is it's not so much the folks that are in front of the camera, the Lawrence Fishburnes or the Omar Epps or the Harper Hills. It's are we doing more to get folks behind the camera? Are we doing more to control the whole distribution network and entertainment? That would be where I would focus my energy.
Well, you know, I don't think it's an either or. Being out here in Los Angeles and knowing a number of out-of-work actors, what is becoming really clear to me is back in the 90s and 2000, I mean, you just had this plethora of black talent. You had The Cosby Show and A Different World and Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and
The WB.
You had Girlfriends and you had just a series of shows. Now, even this new show that's coming on in the 2008-2009 season, Cleveland Brown, the Brown family, it's a cartoon. The voice actor who's playing a black person is white. And so what I find is, okay, if you've got someone of the caliber of a Lawrence Fishburne now having to do TV, as opposed to, for the very reason that Amy said, because there are not enough film roles for him to pay his mortgage so we can sit in a theater. And if we look at the dearth of roles for black women, other than Queen Latifah and Halle Berry, you don't see black women getting feature roles in film. That is an issue, and I think it's going to be up to us using this digital technology to do something about it.
Wayne, very quickly, do you think that it's going to there's going to be a sea change along the lines of what Kevin's saying, possible within the next 5 years, more ownership?
That's the only way that things will change. I mean, the only way things will change is if we begin to control, whether it's through the digital technology, the Web 2.0 skills, the things that young people like Angela Benton and others are doing on Web 2.0, the things that you're doing through NBR. It'll only change when we control the media. That's the only way that we'll be able – when Oprah decides she's going to make a movie, then black female actresses get roles.
All right.
And so we have to have more folks like Oprah making movies.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, guys, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Farai.
We've been talking to Wayne Hicks, otherwise known as The Villager. He writes the blog Electronic Village. He was at member station WGUC in Cincinnati, Ohio. Freelance writer and nonprofit consultant Amy Larimore blogs at Alid's Work in Progress and Political Season. And we had former Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Kevin Ross, who blogs at Three Brothers and a Sister. He was with me at our NPR West studios. You can find links to their blogs and ours at nprnewsandnotes.org. And the conversation doesn't stop here. Our online series, Speak Your Mind, gives you a chance to sound off on the issues you care about. To find out how, go to our blog, nprnewsandviews.org, and click on Speak Your Mind.